And now, Disco Daddy interviews the most iconic people in our history, the Soul Train Dancers. Peace, love, and soul! Enjoy the show!
Hello out there, Disco Daddy here. Welcome to another episode of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. Today we have a very special guest, and he's kicking off June, which is Soul Train Dancer Month on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And he's probably the most well-known, most celebrated dancer from the show. In fact, he's the only dancer who left Soul Train and went on to create even more history in the world of dance, and became the first big screen, first hip-hop artist to become the first big screen cinema star. I'm talking about Shabadoo, and we have him here kicking off June Soul Train Month, our very first episode for June. How you doing, Brother Shabadoo?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Before we get into it, I just wanted to say that, you know, I have a dear friend who happened to come over today visiting me. We're going to hang out today, but we have a long and storied history in terms of our relationship, personally, but also dance-wise. He was one of the original Electric Boogaloo. He performed on the show with the Electric Boogaloo. And in any case, after the Electric Boogaloo and then after my tenure with the Lockers, he went on to dance with me. So his name is Puppet Boozer, but his real name is Marvin Boozer. In any case, okay, I think at some point we'll have him chime in and drop whatever knowledge he has about popping or what have you.
All right, whenever you're ready, at whatever point you can do that. Let's start with Shabadoo, however.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your early history. Before you were a dancer, you were born into this world, a man child in the city of
Chicago.
Okay, Chicago, Illinois.
I was born and raised in Chicago.
Okay. And like many people from the Chicago, which is musically about as deep as you can get, Curtis Mayfield, Five Stair Steps, Etta James, you probably had a lot of music flowing through your household. Why don't you give us the history of Shabadoo, the early history of your childhood in Chicago before you even made the move to become a dancer on the show Soul Train?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to have been raised in primarily a black family and also Puerto Rican. So it wasn't unusual for me to grow up listening to all kinds of music, particularly Spanish or salsa music and R&B, soul, and blues.
Johnny Colon.
Yeah, Eddie Palmieri, you know, Joe Cuba, and the
Yes,
Sixth Man. You know. So it wasn't unusual to hear, like, Celia Cruz and Aretha Franklin.
That's right.
Beautiful.
That's
and so that kind of eclectic musical environment, I think, an influence on my career, so to speak.
Right.
Because I wasn't, you know, I mean, you can get influenced most anywhere, but I think the eclecticness of my upbringing in terms of music, listening to music, and growing up in a culturally diverse family added to my dance overall.
Mm-hmm. What was Chicago like? Now, I was through Chicago in the 70s. Black Peystone Rangers. You couldn't go in a neighborhood if you didn't know nobody, and you didn't want to step in nobody's shoes at a nightclub.
Right. Chicago.
Like? That was a visitor's. That's a visitor's remembrance. But what is it like growing up there?
Well, you know, then your visitor's remembrance is pretty dead on. You know, I tell you, Chicago is a rough and ready city. There were a lot of rules of the road, a lot of rules of the ghetto, that you had to learn in order to survive and in order to navigate through those turbulent waters. But yeah, I grew up with around the Vice Lords. At one point, I was Aladdin King, a disciple. I grew up during the rise of the Blackstone Rangers, now the El Rukin. So anyway, gang violence. We hear it in the news today.
How did you escape that? How did you escape getting caught up in that? That's why I asked you that question. How did you escape?
Well, you know, dance was definitely my salvo. And my sister Fawn, my younger sister Fawn, we would dance. And we even had the opportunity of dancing on Soul Train in Chicago. We weren't a regular staple there, but we did go. In any case, dancing itself, we danced in and around the Chicago area. And pretty much, if gang members knew you could dance or you had a real talent, they'd kind of give you a free pass. And I think that's true even for Los Angeles.
Right, the same way.
Yeah. You know, like I would certainly navigate through, you know, Compton or South Central in general and Long Beach area. And it was rough and ready as well. But if they knew you could dance, it kind of gave you a free pass, but you still had to know the rules of the road, so to speak. And that meant, you know, don't do anything stupid. Like, you know, I was telling someone, hey, you know, I used to lock like in a club. But if you like locking, you're pointing, you have to know your surroundings. So if you like pointed, if I had pointed and knocked someone's drink over or something, that's a behind whooping at that point. So, I mean, or step on somebody's Stacey Adams, you know, I'm out of paper. Especially around total experience or something like that.
Right. Now, at what point in your life, in your young life, did you discover that you could dance?
I knew that around 3-4 years old.
Wow.
I could dance then. Yeah, I remember my aunts and uncles, relatives, friends, my mom's friends, and they'd say, you know, look at him dance. He danced like a little man. You know, so I could always dance, even as a kid. And it was one thing that I felt as a kid that I was really good at. I didn't really feel or have that kind of confidence as a kid in other areas of my life. I really didn't feel that confident in school. I wasn't really good in sport. Although I had the physical ability, had it been nurtured, I could have been.
Well, but you dance, you probably could have been it's the same energy if you think about it, but you weren't attracted to that, probably.
I wasn't attracted to it, and I wasn't nurtured. You know, it wasn't like, and there was certainly a lot of kids in the neighborhood who could play basketball and football. I mean, that's pretty true in black neighborhoods across the country. There's many, you know, black kids that are just gifted, you know, athletes.
Yeah.
So that was certainly true in Chicago. But, again, it wasn't readily available to me or, you know, it wasn't nurtured. But dance was, music was. So I kind of gravitated to that more.
And,
you know, there you go.
Now, did you have any aspirations about going to college?
You know, no. I really hated school. Let me tell you something. Growing up in the school system where I can't speak for other people, but I felt like they didn't really care about me and they didn't really care if I learned or not. I was more, you know, either I kept up with the curriculum or I did not, you know. So I found myself falling behind. At one point, they used to use a term called locked in the mind back then. They said, oh, that boy's locked in the mind. And what that really meant was I had ADD, attention deficit disorder. So I would just daydream a lot. I used to daydream a lot. And even as a kid, I used to sleepwalk. Dreams a lot. And I just didn't learn the way everyone else does. Now, of course, since then, you know, I'm educated now, but it was a difficult thing. But I owe a lot of credit to a teacher named Mrs. Fisher that really believed in me and really helped me to really focus in school a little better. But, you know.
My high school teacher?
No, she was my middle school teacher.
Okay,
My high school, I mean, it's in my book, but in my book, you know, I let it be known that, you know, I was a dropout, you know. So I didn't even have a high school diploma. I've since then graduated from postgraduate university, but I was at one point a dropout, a high school dropout.
Okay. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, dude. I dropped out of high school, went, joined the Air Force, and had to take the GED. They let me in. They said, but you got to take the GED as soon as you complete basic. And I did that, and that was one of the greatest moments of my life, I'm sure of yours, too, when you do finally get that piece of paper at 20-something years old. Okay. So don't feel bad about that at all, you know. So now let's move on up to Don Cornelius. This guy started a show in Chicago called Soul Train. And you are one of the few people who could actually tell us the beginning, because I know Los Angeles history and most people think the show began here. But tell us the true history of Don Cornelius' Soul Train and the involvement with Shabadoo.
Well, you know, at the time that it aired in Chicago, you know, Don Cornelius had a co-host. I don't know if you're aware of that. In Chicago, he was Clint Jent. So Clint Jent was the co-host of Soul Train. In any case, during that time, there were a few shows that were on TV. They were that were primarily black, and they were on the UHF channels, the off channels.
The local station.
Yeah, the local stations. And one was called Rhythm and Blues, or Red Hot and Blues. Another one featured the song Here Come the Judge by Pigman Martin.
Shorty Long, you know, I remember.
And Soul Train was another one.
Okay.
Soul Train was a popular one. And the show was about as big as someone's living room. At least it felt that big. And it had a cutout. It had a cutout of the Soul Train, the front of a train or a caboose. And it just had some curtains that kind of like that they would draw in the back. Any case, it wasn't the high school show that it became in Los Angeles. But here's another history note that many people are not aware of. The first season of Soul Train in Los Angeles, simultaneously, there was a Soul Train still running in Chicago. So Don Cornelius was filming both. He was filming the local show and the national syndicated show.
Oh, okay.
So was it wasn't like Soul Train completely.
Do you know why he did that?
Well, because he wasn't sure how Soul Train would really take off. And what many people don't realize is that even the show in Los Angeles, you know, the so-called original Soul Train gang members, you know, which would include Demeter Joe Freeman or Scooby-Doo or Don Campbell or what have you, they weren't actually the real, or even Pat Davis, they weren't even the real ones, the real first one. There were some other teenagers that were on that show, I think part of the first season, and before they got a hold of all of us that the world has come to know.
Wow.
That's just hidden history. If you research it, you're going to find that there's another group of people that none of us were on that show in Los Angeles.
Are any of these old shows on YouTube? Any of the older shows that you're talking about, are they on YouTube?
They might. You might be able to find them.
Okay. And we would
know it actually, if you Googled, probably if you searched Facebook, I saw an article where some of the original teenagers that danced on the show were disgruntled about the idea of all of us calling ourselves original Soul Train gang members on Soul Train in Los Angeles. And they said, no, they weren't. We were.
No one
has ever heard of them, but I think that should be mentioned. And the other thing is, in my mind, the original Soul Train gang cannot use the term original Soul Train gang. Because unless you dance on the one in Chicago, that is the original Soul Train.
Wow.
I mean, if you want to get technical, there's a number of them that can't really say that, rightfully say that. Now, they can say they're one or some of the originals. We could say we're some of the originals on the show in L.A.
Mm-hmm,
you have
right.
to be very specific and not say Soul Train because that's all encompassing. So I mean, so technically speaking, you could say that me and my sister, and maybe a few other ones, could say that we were original Soul Train Gang, not only original Soul Train Gang and the original Soul Train Gang, but the original Soul Train Gang in Chicago and Los Angeles.
And Los Angeles, okay.
Yeah.
Now, I was also told that Don, and this was later, and you can verify that, because we're going to get back to your early days and how you got on the show. But I also heard that Don took the name Soul Train Gang from the dancers, instead of identifying them at some point in the show, and began, he started a group for his record company. Am I correct?
Well, yeah. No, I'm very familiar. I'm familiar with it. No, at some point, we were known as the Soul Train Gang.
Right.
Soul Train Dancers. But when he started Soul Train Records and then later Solar Records, and he formed a group, it's a musical group, a vocal musical group.
Right.
He wanted that name to be specific to them. So they were called the Soul Train Gang, I think. Mm-hmm. Those still singers, you know.
And they have disappeared in history. You are still here. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. So that goes to show right there. Maybe it wasn't one of Don's best decisions.
No, he screwed up on that one.
Yeah, okay.
But he screwed up on a lot of. He screwed up on a lot of the.
You could tell us about that, but we're talking about you right now, Shabadoo.
Yeah.
How did you join the show in Chicago? You have an interesting story that goes from Chicago.
My sister and I went up there one day. It wasn't difficult to go on that show. It was free. You could just show up. You just had to know where it was, and that was it.
Mm. Wow. No auditions or anything like that?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't difficult to go on the show.
Okay. They needed the dance presence of dancers in order to make the show work.
Exactly. So, you know, basically because it was such a small space, they were limited as to how many people could actually, you know, dance on the dance floor.
Okay.
So it was basically first come, first serve sort of thing. I must say, you know, my sister and I were not the popular ones of the show in Chicago.
Okay.
You know, there were other ones, certainly other ones that were older than us. At this point, I had to be all of 14 or 15, maybe 15, going on 16. I was about 15. My sister might have been about 13. Mm. So she's 2 years younger than I am, so I was about all of 15. So the older kids who were like 17, 18, 16, 17 were a lot popular from the show than we were, and then were frequent to show more often than we did. I mean, we weren't like famous from it. So the only footnote you could say is that we performed on the show, and we were happy to say that.
How long did Soul Train run in Chicago?
I think a couple of years, if not just a year or so.
Okay, 70 or 71, it
broke down. I think it was 71.
Okay.
I think it was from 71 through 72 in Chicago. And after the end of 72, it was full on L.A.
Okay. And that brings us to how you, and I think your sister, if I'm correct, ended up making a transition to the entertainment capital of the world. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Me and my sister, my mom moved our family here circa fall of 1971.
And maybe, she moved you here. Why?
Yeah, to Placentia, California. She moved us here, to escape the streets of Chicago. So we moved to, Placentia, California.
But you had told me one time, I believe, that she really was behind you as a dancer, and when Don moved the show, that was sort of, was it a heartbreaking moment for you? I mean, because at that time, before she told you we're going to move to L.A., the show, which you probably were heavily involved in, something that you really enjoyed doing, was leaving Chicago. How did Don tell you guys?
How did what?
How did Don tell you that the show was going to be leaving Chicago and going to L.A.? I mean, at what point did you find out?
Well, he pretty much made the announcement on television.
Oh, okay.
Don Cornelius didn't tell us in person. It was like, hey, Adolfo. Remember, at this point, I didn't have the name Shabadoo.
Okay.
I didn't have a street dance name. I just had my regular name from Chicago. As a matter of fact, as I was growing up in Chicago, my name was Cucci.
Okay.
I was just known as Cucci. K-U-C-H-I. Sometimes
okay.
It was spelled K-U-C-H-I-E. So my whole family called me Cucci. I didn't have a street dance name at that point.
Okay.
So when we moved, obviously when they moved to L.A., we saw, because people were still in L.A., I mean, Chicago at some point, when we saw, we knew that the show was still in Chicago, and we also would see the one that was coming from L.A.
L.A., uh-huh, okay.
We were aware that that was happening.
At what point did he pull the plug on the
show? If my memory serves me right, we moved to Placentia, California sometime in the late fall or late winter of 71 or early spring of 72.
Okay. Did you immediately contact Don, or did he already know?
No.
Okay.
No, we did not immediately contact Don. We didn't have a personal relationship with Don. We couldn't call Don Don Cornelius up or anything like that.
But did he know you well enough to
move? We settled in to L.A.
Okay.
Learning the ropes. I met Campbell Lock Jr., who really showed me the ropes around L.A. And the street dance. I have a cousin. My cousin. She's my cousin.
Right.
Not necessarily by blood, and my aunt, not necessarily by blood, but we consider her and call her our auntie, is Marla Gibbs.
Who was that? That was your cousin?
Marla Gibbs from the Jefferson.
Oh, wow. Okay, Marla.
Marla Gibbs, my cousin, and my cousin Angela, they moved out here from Chicago first.
Angela is your cousin?
Yes.
I worked with Marla, and just to throw this in, she 227, the TV show was a play.
Yeah, 227,
Right. I was on the light crews because Marla had opened up a little theater production company on Broadway here in L.A., and Angela and I worked together with the Lincoln Kilpatrick Theater Company studying as actors back in 74, 75. So
I knew that was back in the Watts Writer Workshop and all that?
Right, exactly, back in those days.
Okay.
And then I met Marla years later. I met Angela first. We're about the same age. And then I met Marla, and she also bought a nightclub out here, Marla Gibbs, Memory Lane.
Yes, of course.
And right. So I was on the light crew of 227 when it was a play produced by Marla Gibbs, and Angela was the artistic director of the theater company out here. So we're all good friends with families, matter of fact. Wow, this is a small world, Shabadoo. You're listening to Shabadoo tell the most potent, interesting history of Soul Train and his life on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. Continue, my brother. You were working with Angela, and
What happened was when we moved to Placentia, California, we connected with Marla Gibbs and my cousin Angela.
So they were family.
And so, here's a little history footnote, just so you know that Angela is a little kid. She's a little slightly older than I am, and as a kid. I mean, we called Marla, I don't know if you know Marla's name from Chicago.
No.
But a lot of people call her Florence because of the show, and they know her as Marla Gibbs. But we all call her Dimple.
Oh, I never knew that.
That's Marla's name to us. We all refer to her as Dimple. Marla and my mom were like sisters. So when we were as children, me and Angela, I used to get Angela's hand-me-down clothes, Every once in a while we laugh because I used to wear like her pajamas and stuff. But
you're kidding.
Yeah. In any case, it was Angela who actually brought me to the first street dance club here. She brought me to a club here called the Citadel. Remember the Citadel?
Yes.
Oh, she brought me to the Citadel.
Wow.
That's where I saw all the Soul Train dancers there. And then we were at the Black Student Union. That's where I met Campbell Locke Jr. And that led to a friendship between me and Campbell Locke Jr. And then he introduced me and my sister to Scooby Doo, and then that's how I met Fluky Luke, and that's how we got on Soul Train.
Okay, you got to stop right there and just go back to that moment. Don Campbell, you must admit, is a legend also in dance, just like yourself. But now the meeting of Shabadoo and Don Campbell, that deserves a little more. tell us a little more about how that, and also. He is credited with creating the locking dance, which later becomes pop locking. You got to go into a little bit about that. Was he as unique when you met him as it was when you guys formed the group? I mean, in other words, was he already doing many of the things that later became attributed to him?
Yeah. Don Campbell is, you know, accredited with being the father or creator of the lock dance style. But I got to say, and I would be remiss if I didn't say specifically, Don Campbell, although he should, you know, get credit for the locking form, he can't get credit for all of it, though, however.
Right.
There are a number of other dance. So I have come to codify the locking style into two forms, really. There's the Campbell lock, and that's what Don Campbell does specifically. And then there is the locking lexicon. The locking lexicon incorporates all of the dance styles created by other members of the Lockers and other extended family members of the Lockers and associates that were not part of the locking. And that would be Scooby-Doo, Peter Rabbit or Tony Gogo or F&M. And his brother Rubber Band Man, the Captain Crunch and the Funky Bunch, and a whole bunch of other people, even including Alpha Anderson. There's just a number of street dancers from the early 70s, the Dance on Soul Train, that were contributors to the locking style. So
right.
Don Campbell can't rightfully take claim for those, like the Witchaways or the Scooby-Doos or the Stop and Goes or the Quickies or the Pimp Walks or any of that. He didn't create any of that. Those are created by other people. So,
do you think that Don takes credit or that people have attributed to all of this stuff to him? Because
I think a little bit of both. One is they attributed all these to him, and he quietly allows it to happen, and that's correct.
Right. Okay.
So, Don Campbell, you created the lock. Be happy for that. But don't take everybody else's dance. You didn't make up those other stuff. You didn't. As a matter of fact, he can't even take the credit for the name of the dance itself. You'd have to give that to Demeter Joe Freeman. Demeter Joe Freeman is the one who coined the term the Campbell lock.
Wow.
Okay,
that's
a gem, man.
You're dropping bombs.
Let me walk you through this.
Go ahead, please.
Demeter Joe could have said Don Campbell freeze, but she didn't. She used the word lock, and I think she misappropriated that word, I challenge anybody who you're going through life and you would say, you know, have you ever told anybody to lock? I mean, not the word dance or whatever before the term Campbell lock or locking or any of that stuff. You wouldn't even know how to tell somebody how to lock their body. You just say lock your body. What you would say was freeze. But I think it's because Demeter Joe is a little bit, and I say this respectfully, on the countryside. I think she misappropriated that word. I think when she told Don Campbell to lock, she didn't mean lock your joint. She meant freeze. Now, had she continued to say Campbell freeze, the dance could have been called the freeze for all we know.
Right.
But okay. it took someone like Demeter Joe Freeman to see the dance and then say to Don Campbell, hey, Campbell, lock or freeze.
Wow.
And so he didn't tell people, he wasn't the one going around telling people, hey, I call it the Campbell lock, because
right.
Don Campbell fortuitous happenstance stumbled on the dance itself. It wasn't like he said, oh, I'm going to do my hand like this, I'm going to do my body like that. No, it's just because he's odd. Here's a person, here's the oddity of it all. The person who is credited for creating one of the most soulful, funkiest dances on the planet can't dance. Okay, if you knew Don Campbell in person, outside of the lock, he's almost like a dancing savant. He can only do that. If you told him to do other popular dances of the day, you would see how awkward and how much he cannot dance.
Wow.
I will go on record right now with saying this. I'll make this statement unequivocally, and I'll yield the floor. Don Campbell can Campbell lock, but Don Campbell cannot dance.
Okay. And there is a difference.
There's a total difference.
Right. Right.
There's a total difference.
Okay.
And here, let me make this reference as well.
Uh-huh.
When on the surface, if you don't know our martial arts, it all looks the same to you, doesn't it? I mean,
right.
You can't tell the difference between Shotokan karate versus kung fu versus Jeet Kune Do versus whatever Taekwondo. It all looks the same to you.
Right.
Right. If you don't know martial arts, if you're a skilled person and skilled in martial arts, then you can recognize the more than subtle differences between the styles and the approaches of those styles. Well, Don Campbell has created, let's say, you could associate the Campbell lock with karate, Shotokan karate, but he cannot take the credit for martial arts.
Right, right, I got you.
Martial arts is like the same as saying lockingness. Within that form, it's so many different variations of it that he cannot take credit for because it becomes something else.
Okay. Anyway. Wow. Now the things that he used to do, jumping up in the air, sliding on his knees, throwing his hat up, catching it on his head. Those are things he probably had to practice for hours. But he has suffered from that because now his knees, you can see, they're gone and everything like that. Dancing taken its toll on Shabbat? We're going to get back to the formation of the lockers, however. That was a very interesting segment, however. I did let you go on with that. But has this taken your toll? Do you have any the arthritis or anything? Your body obviously is not in the same shape as him. But over the years...
I have been really blessed in terms of still being able to dance somewhat. But to be honest, I suffer from some pain in my right knee. Never torn anything. I never broke my knee or hip or anything like that. So I did go to the doctor, and the doctor took some x-rays, and he just basically said, hey, you have the body and knees of a person to dance for 50 years. So, what you're suffering from is called wear and tear.
Right.
He said, listen, I could do some surgery on certain things, but it would decrease your mobility. He said, my suggestion to you is go get into some, pain management. In other words, take some ibuprofen and keep on moving. He said, that's the remedy. Keep on moving.
Okay.
Don't stop.
There you go.
And see, that's one of the advantages I have over, let's say, my peers who started out when I did. A lot of those guys stopped, the Scooby-Doos or whatever, they stopped for 20-some years. Even Don Campbell stopped for 20 years or more. But those guys, they didn't they didn't keep dancing like I did, and that's my secret. I just never stopped.
Never stopped. In a way
so
that
able to, I would say out of the 100% that I was able to do at the top of my game, I can say that I'm about 70%
okay.
of what I was fully capable of.
Okay. But,
like, my knowledge in my head is fully there. That's why I train people and I have a certification, an instructor certification program, where I can still teach other people. So I'm more of a coach now, if anything. But so I can just still do a lot of it. I'm just not going to jump off, 10-foot stages into full splits like I was and all that.
Right, right on. Okay, you've taken us on a long journey. I got to take you back to where you meet Don Campbell and Tony Basil. How did the formation of the Lockers come about? First of all, you got to reintroduce yourself to the Soul Train show. You moved here to Los Angeles with your family. Bam. What happened?
Well, we started dancing on Soul Train, and shortly thereafter, Tony Basil, who's kind of like, well, I refer to her like, is our Abe Saperstein. And if anyone knows who Abe Saperstein is, Abe Saperstein is credited for founding the Harlem Globetrotters.
Right.
Now, he certainly didn't teach those black boys how to dance in Chicago, because that's where the Harlem Globetrotters originated, in Chicago, not Harlem.
Right.
He didn't teach the boys how to play basketball in Chicago. What he did was he fashioned them into a professional troupe. Well, Tony Basil had to take the credit for that, but she can't take the credit for teaching us how to dance. We already know how to dance, and we can dance
Tony
very well.
Tony is white.
Tony's a white lady.
How did she get into
it? I want to make it clear. Okay. There's been a lot of talk about Don Campbell founding the Lockers or forming the Lockers. He did not do so. Tony Basil has that credit by herself.
Wow.
Don Campbell did not do it. And anybody who says that he did it is not telling the truth. He did not do it. I was there. He did not do it. He did not carry the responsibilities of the group from day to day. It was Tony Basil. And after Tony Basil left the group, then I became the leader of the group.
Okay.
I led the managerial duties. Now I've had people say, oh, Shabdu, how could you make that statement? I said, well, I made that statement because Don Campbell also made the statement. I have a video clip of Don Campbell in his own words describing the day, the exact day when it happened. We were performing for the Dick Van Dyke television special starring Lucille Ball and the Lockers.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, Campbell Locke Jr. and Fluky Luke approached Don Campbell and said that they wanted to draw a formal agreement with me as the manager and to lead the group. And he was like, no, I don't want Shabadoo to be the leader of the group. I should be the leader. They said, Don, Shabadoo is good at it. He should be. He's already doing it anyway. And so, but after exchanging a bunch of expletives and telling me to go form my own group, I did so. And then Don Campbell, here's I'm going to rest it on this because I'm just tired of all the messes out there, and I just want to be clear. Don Campbell could have formed the Lockers. After the Lockers, he could have formed a group and proved us all wrong and taken the Lockers to another level, but he didn't. He tried and he failed. I went on, it was in my career and was able to make moves that he wasn't able to, the same moves that I would have made for all of us, but instead his ego didn't allow for it to happen. So I have a tape in a video with Don Campbell saying the guys approached me and wanted Shabbat to be the leader, and he said, no, I thought I should be the leader, and that was the reason we just, when I left, I said to him, I don't want to be a part of the Lockers. When I left, I took Campbell Lock Jr. says, if Shabadoo goes, I go. Fluky says, if Shabadoo goes, I go. And Tony Gogo at the time went with us.
Wow.
And that was the end of the Lockers. Now, you can talk all the best you want. You can say whatever you want. But the proof, I have the proof. And that's the end of that. Now, I'm happy to say I was one of the Lockers. I love those guys. We did some fantastic work together. We broke a lot of boundaries. We overcame a lot of racism. We opened doors so that other people of color can enjoy what we're doing. Not just people of color, but people of every color to enjoy the hard work we did here in Los Angeles together as a team. I'm happy for it. I'm grateful for it. But the truth is, Don Campbell, in the end, was detrimental to the growth of the movement going forward.
Okay. Now, that being said, there's also a tale of you guys approaching Don Cornelius to get paid as a group dancing on the show. Is that true?
Yeah, the truth is this, unequivocally, and sometimes I think people get caught up in semantics. When I say we did, or you say we did, or you say the Lockers did, you got to understand that when we didn't, as a collective group, go to Don Cornelius and say to Don Cornelius, nor did I say to Don Cornelius out of my mouth, hey, we should get paid to be on the show.
Yeah.
I would say that Don Campbell asked to be paid on the show, but by default, in association, when he was kicked off the show, they kicked all of us off too. So it's like okay, we have dignitaries here in the United States of America.
Right.
When a dignitary, a Secretary of State or a Vice President or a President goes to another country and makes claims to that other country or pushes a position that is in favor, that's favorable to the United States, all of the United States didn't show up to the doorsteps of Beijing, China. All
right.
We need to send is one person, and that one person speaks for the entire United States.
Right.
Well, when Don Campbell went and he said that he should get paid and that we should get paid, he was speaking for all of us, and by default, we were going to either benefit from that move or suffer the consequences of that move.
Mm.
I could say we benefited from the move, and it was a short-term consequence that we paid because we weren't allowed to dance on the show anymore because of that statement.
Wow. You're listening to Shabadoo on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B, the legendary Shabadoo telling us the tales of Soul Train and story of his life. Continue, my brother. You're on Soul Train. You join the Lockers. Let me tell you an interesting story about Tony Basil.
Yeah.
That's how I met you. Olympics,
okay.
I performed the L.A. Breakers. I think this was September. We were at Any City Cultural Center. And this was 84, September 84, 1984.
You met Tony Basil in 1984?
See, Tony came by my house, picked me up, took me to the Forum, took me up to the bleachers, and said, you never met Shabadoo, have you? I said, no. And she introduced you to me right there at the Forum. You might remember you were there for the Olympic audition.
Oh, no. Okay, wait. Okay, the only time, okay, first of all, wait a second. In 1984, or this is before we did Breaking That, because it was either the tail end of 83 or going the beginning of 84, we were still on tour with Lionel Richie.
No, this was September 84. Lionel Richie was going to do the closing ceremonies. You were at the Forum. Am I correct?
Okay, yeah, right. But we didn't have
right.
to do
it.
Tony
was
going to
meet
you there. We weren't there to do an audition for them because we had the right to dance on there if we wanted to.
Right. But that's how I met you. Tony introduced
you to me right there.
Okay. I knew you wouldn't remember that. That was a long time ago. I remember it because we were supposed to be doing a show, meeting the Swatch Watch had just come out. The guy called me. I was in Newsweek magazine. He said, we need some L.A. Breakers for commercials. I'm going to fly out there on September, whatever. September, that same day, was the Olympic auditions at the Forum, and my guys wanted to go there. So this guy flew all the way from New York, represented Swatch Watch, came to Inner City Cultural Center, and none of my dancers showed up because they all went to the Forum. Okay, it was very, very embarrassing. I went home. That's when Tony called me. She said, you're going to the auditions at the Forum? I said, my guys already there. She came by, picked me up, and took me up to Taylor. You know, and that's how I met you. That's how I met you, my brother. And we took a photograph, which I've lost over the years, but I'm sure Tony still has a copy of it. But go ahead. That's my little story right there. We got some interesting contact points along the way. Okay. So, you're on Soul Train, you leave the show, the lockers break up. What happens then with Shabazz?
I went solo. You know, and I tell you, for 1977, when we disbanded, our last show was the Dick Van Dyke
Special. You went solo? You didn't form another group yourself?
No, what happened was that song, just so you know, the song that we're dancing to, I own that song. The song that we're dancing to on the show, me and another guy, we created that. We produced that in the studio. I created that number as well. The number is called Locker's Roll Call. Mm. The Locker's Roll Call, including the outfits, were the Keystone Cops.
Right.
The Keystone Cops meets, and the song is called the Street Note. The song is called Do It, and it meant Shabba Do It. And so that song I own that song, and I created the number, including the look. That was our last show. When I went solo, after we disbanded in my garage in Anaheim, I went solo. No, I didn't want to form a group at that point.
Because you didn't want to go through anything.
I just went ahead and took Don Campbell's advice. He was angry, and he said, why don't you just go and call it the Effin' Shabadoo?
Wow.
Call your group the Effin' Shabadoo. I said, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Why don't I just do that? This is my last show. And I went along. I tell you, and I'm going to be honest, it was a rough road that first year. My son was just being born. My son, Deshaun, I had a newborn, and I didn't really know what I was going to do with myself, with my career. And I was deeply saddened by the breakup, but I knew that it had to happen. Me and Don Campbell, we mixed like water and oil.
Wow.
It was just not going to happen. So, Bacchus, I was the youngest member, and he was the oldest member, so it was like the quintessential new school versus old school within the lockers.
Gotcha.
And just so you know, the new school won.
There you go.
So I went ahead and I formed a group. And what I did was I would do like a lot of different shows around town, around L.A. I would get into dance contests. I did whatever I could to survive. And one day, chance. Punking and posing, and people start backing in the straight community. Not just dance in the gay community. And what I did was I mixed that style, the gay style called punking and posing, with locking, and it created a new dynamic. So I became popular wearing the baggy suits with my hair slicked back, looking like a 1940s movie star.
I've looked at them. I've seen those videos. You got star quality. I've seen those videos.
I started that look, and I started to get a lot of attention. Well, one of my first breaks was on Broadway with Bette Midler, starring in her show called Divine Madness. I got a call from Kenny Ortega, a choreographer named Kenny Ortega, back in the days, and I was the first one to perform on Broadway, locking, hopping, and whacking.
Wow. What year was this, Chef?
This was about 1979. But by then, you got to know, I had already kind of connected with, there was a tweener show before the Bette Midler one. The tweener show was a show I started in called Dance Class, and it was produced by Jeff Tosh. And during that time, I was rehearsing at the Coronet Theater over on La Cienega. And during the rehearsals one day, one of the girls, I think it was No No Nanette, and she said that there was some some boys at the door that were big fans of mine, and they wanted to meet me. Well, mm-hmm. that group changed the landscape, helped change the landscape of what of street dance that as we know it today. So anyway, those kids was a group, they called themselves the Electronic Boogaloo Lockers. They were wearing.
What year? What year are you talking about now? What year?
We're talking about 1970, late 78.
78.
Like all right. I think it's somewhere right. Do you know? Oh, okay. I have Puppy Boozer here. So Puppy Boozer is one of the original members of that troupe. Anyway,
hey, right.
What year was that? 79. He said it was 1979.
There
so 1979, I met the Electric Boogaloo. Electronic Boogaloo Lockers. And at that point, they were wearing red and white striped socks and a red knickers. They kind of looked like the Lockers.
Right.
They did it. Basically, they wanted me to see them dance, and they were big fans of mine. And then that group was Poppin' Pete, Boogaloo Sam, I think Sally was there. Puppy Boozer was supposed to be there. I found out that Puppy Boozer wasn't there that day because he had to do homework. He was in school? He was in school. So he gives you an idea how young they were. They were like, no, boy, you got to go to school. Anyway, so I guess the other boys were playing hooky, what have you. They were supposed to be at school. So they playing hooky. They wind up at my rehearsal. But they do this dance routine. It was basically a locker routine. But it was at the end of the locker routine, they started doing this other thing. And when I first saw it, my first impression was it looked like they were doing some kind of spastic or electric-looking robot.
Yeah.
And the other guy who was a producer was Jeff Kucha. Jeff Kucha was like, what is that? So then we went and met the rehearsal hall, and we started talking about their locking. First, Jeff Kucha was like, oh, you know, they're locking. It wasn't that good, but because you know we had the lockers, you know, and I'm one of the lockers. He was like, "Well, you know, the thing they were doing at, you remember they were like the thing they were doing at the end. They were doing like the robot thing, much different.
They had like little ticks and something like that.
You know, robot Charles doing the way
right.
he is on Soul Train, and then you got like these guys doing the evolution." So in any case, we were like, he says, yeah, it looks like some kind of electric robot. I was like, yeah, I don't know what that is. So then, when we went back, we approached the guys. We said, you know, what is that dance? And they said, oh, where we live, with the dance we do it where we live, and we're like, what is that? And he said, we call it boogalooing. He said, yeah, because again, they said this is a dance they do. And we were like, what is that? And then they were like, so, and that, I don't know who said it, but somebody said in that thing that it was the Bay Area. And then after a close examination, we came to find out Fresno was what it was. But at that point, I guess they were going back and forth from Fresno to the Bay Area, going to those dances or whatever. If you know, Fresno's a smaller of the Bay Area of the up north. It's kind of fringe city. It's not the main one. So you got to understand that most to so-called big city going into Oakland, and even into San Francisco. Okay, so once I started understanding that later on, but in this moment, they give us the impression and made very clear that Boogaloo Sam was the leader of this Electronic Boogaloo Lockers because they had been watching the lockers on Soul Train and all that stuff. Okay, we wanted them to perform as a specialty act in my show. So at that moment, we said we could only take three of them or four of them, and they would have to pick within themselves.
How many of them were?
Who they were. And we know that it was Poppin' Pete. We know that it was Robot Dane. We know that it was, at one point, it was Boogaloo Sam, but Boogaloo Sam got swapped out. It was Scally was in it at one point. And Sid, Creeping Sid, who was the first person I ever seen do the backslide. He was doing the backslide the first time. He did it way before Michael Jackson. And let me tell you something. When I said I was on Broadway, I did it years before Michael Jackson as well. Wearing the zoo suit the whole nine.
Okay.
So, again, what happened was those guys gave a quick history about where they're from, but we wanted to hire three or four of them, so we did. We hired them in my group, and we named them in the show the Electric Boogaloo. So we called them as part of the show. They later adopted that name as themselves, only adding an S on the end of Boogaloo, calling themselves the Electric Boogaloos.
Wow.
But in the show, we called them the Electric Boogaloo, where we would have them, they were dressed in black shirts and white gloves and ties and white apple caps and white Compton Creepers of Coca Sacks. And they were glowing dark. So as part of the Electric Boogaloo, so they were kind of like any case, that group, a close relationship was forged between me and them. I started to use them in shows. I started to use them like if I had a TV show or whatever. One of them was the Real People. And Real People, and I want to be clear, in the Real People show, the Electric Boogaloo were not wearing, as a group, the baggy suit look. I was already wearing that look, as I said I was doing with the waxing and all of that.
Right.
So when you see the Electric Boogaloo on the Real People show, most of them are wearing my clothes. The only one that is not wearing my clothes was Puppet Boozer, that I remember. He had his own clothes. But he had the ability to be able to... He had a little bit more money than the rest of them. They didn't have that kind of money to be buying a suit. I'll say that right now. You know, for whatever reason, he might have had a part-time job, or he had two parents that worked and was able to give him a little bit more. Those guys, when I went over to the Electric Boogaloo's house for the first time, you know, there was like three, four of them sleeping in one room.
Right.
They go to show you. I mean, economically, they just
couldn't
afford that. It was a little harder, and they had a single parent. They had just their mom. I didn't see a father there. Puppet Boozer was blessed with having a mom and a dad. Dad was from the military, had a long-standing job, and he had a real a different kind of life than other boys did. I know for sure, because I came to know Boozer much more than the rest of them. So what happened was that look, the baggy suit look, the zoot suit look, was the look that I had already started. The Electric Boogaloo did not start the zoot suit look. Shabba Doo was wearing that well before them. So I want to make that clear.
Okay.
Yeah, a khaki suit, they were there, maybe Dickies and stuff like this, but they weren't wearing the finer I've known for. So in any case, that's clear now. And I have, after Electric Boogaloo, that influence, that led to the Bette Midler Divine Madness at the Majestic Theater on Broadway, where I introduced the three crown jewels of street dance at that point. There was no B-boy mentioned in those days. There was none of that. We didn't see any of that. All we knew about was popping or boogalooing, locking, and whacking. That was
what year did that show?
Those are all West Coast dance forms. They're not East Coast dance forms. I've been hearing people on the East Coast saying that popping started on the East Coast. That's nonsense.
Nonsense.
They can own the B-boy. That's there for sure. But that other stuff, locking, popping, whacking, and so forth, and boogalooing, is strictly a West Coast, our West Coast forms.
And I
want to say,
go ahead.
And I say that historically, and I say it was with great pride. These dances were not only formed here, but they were honed here as well. They were created here, and we perfected them here. So we on our own, we've been indoctrinated into the hip hop culture. But we, in our history, predate the hip-hop culture. We're happy to be part of the hip-hop culture, but we're not so beholden to the hip-hop culture that we don't realize that we understand that our roots go way deeper than the hip-hop culture.
Than hip-hop, yes. I can add a note there. When I created the L.A. Breakers in 83, I had breakdancers. By that time, they were up on Hollywood Boulevard in the same corner right now, Hollywood and Vine. You can still see that became like a very popular outside place to dance. And I wanted to create a breakdance group and went up there and got breakers. But then I remembered, wow, the reason breaking was delayed in coming out here for so long is because the West Coast had their own dance styles, which you were just talking about. You see what I'm saying?
Have.
Otherwise, breaking would have been here almost simultaneously. People moved from New York to L.A. all the time. So there were break dancers out here, you know what I'm saying, 80, 81, 82. But it never caught on because of pop, and locking. You see what I'm saying?
You're right.
To have two separate auditions. I had auditions for Breakers at the Inner City Cultural Center, and I had auditions for, by that time, 83, 84, Pop Locking was the name. Okay, so we had Pop Lockers. It was the first group to integrate entirely not only the dance styles on a stage, but I had Asian, I had Filipinos, I had blacks, I had whites from Glendale, and we became McDonald's official breakdance group and Adidas official breakdance group because we had that variety. And we had the breaking and pop locking was always outstanding in the show. Whenever a breaker got on the floor and did his thing, the crowd, whenever a popper got out there and did his thing, the crowd screamed. So eventually it all became integrated. And then finally I was running into people who could break dance and pop lock. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But. We had our own distinct style, which delayed the advent of breaking out here. But
we had three major pillars. We had locking, popping, / boogalooing. And you gotta understand, even people who confuse it all, popping is kind of generalized term, but they're quite different. Boogalooing and popping are two different things altogether. Although one can pop without boogalooing, and you can boogaloo and not pop, and sometimes you can pop and boogaloo, they're really distinct, different forms. Let's say that may have some symbiotic relationship. Like for instance, in my opinion, it's sort of like I described it in this way. About other dances, and that's true even for this popping, boogalooing, strutting, bodying, kicking, all these are very, very specific things.
What do you call your style of dance, Shabadoo?
Shabadoo. I just call my dance Shabadoo.
Really? Your style of dance, Shabadoo? Because
for clarity's sake, when I say Shabadoo, I'm the street dance Jeet Kune Do.
Gotcha.
Shabadoo is my Jeet Kune Do. Shwe style is my Jeet Kune Do. It's an amalgamation of every style. I'm the first fusion artist, the first fusion street dancer. When other people were dealing in segregated sort of things, I'll do this, I'll do that. I did all of it.
Okay.
I used to pop just as much as I used to lock.
Okay. But now,
I just call it Shabadoo.
That's your style. Where did you come up with the name Shabadoo?
Shabadoo?
Yeah.
My name before that was called Sir.
But did you come up with
the name Sir Lancelot from Campbell Jr. And then one night when we were dancing at the Summit on the Hill, used to be the club up from people used to go to after Maverick Flat.
Yeah, on Crenshaw.
After we would leave Maverick Flat, we'd go up the hill to the Summit.
Right.
Over on Stocker, right?
And Stocker and La Brea, yep.
Yeah. So we go up there, up the hill to the summit. And back in those days, records was something that people used to play when the band wasn't playing.
Exactly.
But bands used to play, like at Mary's class, you know, you'd have all these groups playing there, like Rufus, like Chaka Khan and Rufus, or Rufus. Yeah. You have the Dance Machine. You had all these different. Not Dance Machine, the Love Machine. You had all these different groups that would play there, including like the Gap Band, people like that.
Right.
And you know, then down the street we had, kind of set it up so you understand how I got my name, but in any case, a band was playing at the summit. The band was called Bloodstone.
I remember
you know this group, the R&B.
Natural High.
Yeah. Well, they, during one of their sets, they were saying, shabba-dabba-doo-ba, shabba-dabba-doo. Shabba-dabba-doo-ba was like, some kind of punk. And they were just riffing like that, shabba-dabba-doo-ba, shabba-dabba-doo-ba, shabba-dabba-doo-ba. And so I approached Catalog that, and I said, hey, I want to change my name. He goes, to what? I said, I want to change my name to shabba-dabba-doo-ba, shabba-dabba-doo. He's like, oh, that's long. He said, you should call yourself Shabba-doo. You know, he said just like that, Shop Duke. I said, Shop Duke. In any case, over a period of about a year or so, I went, my name had several different changes of spelling because I didn't know how to spell the thing. I was like, it was like S-H-A-B-A-D-U-S-H-A-B-A-B-U-D-A and all this stuff. And eventually landed on Shabba Duke, S-H-A-B-B-A. Hyphen capital O-O. Now you got to know that when I started calling my name Shabba Doo, that didn't really sit well with Scooby Doo. But in any case, it's a name that stuck, right?
Oh man, okay, I've got to take you up to the point where you make the biggest leap of your life to the big screen. Okay, after all these adventures that you've been through as a dancer, all of a sudden, how does this opportunity come up and present itself to Shabba Doo? You're listening to Shabba Doo on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B.
You know, what's the question?
The big screen. How did you make that leap? When did that opportunity come for you to become the first hip hop artist to be the first big screen star?
Yeah, I hold the credit of being hip hop's first matinee idol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a sequence of fortuitous events that led to this moment. You couldn't say it was one single event. It was just all of them. It was being on Broadway.
Okay.
It was all the wonderful shows I did with Toni Basil and her live shows that allowed me to be different characters. It's just the experience, the breadth of my experience working with so many different people over a long period of time. I worked with the casting of West Side Story, including the late David Winters, which is a dear friend of mine who played Arab on Broadway and in the movie. Jaime Rogers, Russ Tamlin. And all these people I met through Toni Basil.
This
experience of working with them. When I did the big show, I had my own series. I got my own television series on NBC. After the late Steve Allen saw me in Bette Midler's show on Broadway.
What year was this?
This was the season of 1979.
Okay, wow. You were getting busy.
Yeah. So I became a regular cast choreographer on NBC's The Big Show, and part of that cast was the late Neil Carter, the late Graham Chapman from Monty Python, Steve Allen, and a number of people. And I posted some of the numbers I did with, like, the late Flip Wilson. I used Pat Davis from Soul Train in my numbers, the Lockers in my numbers, the original members of the Lockers. I used the Electric Boogaloos in those shows. Puppet Boozer went on to do all of the shows with me on that series. It was all of that experience on Nationwide and having my own television series and that led up to me choreographing Lionel Richie's All Night Long video.
Mm-hmm.
After doing the All Night Long video and having the Broadway credits, the locker credits, my solo credits, all of that, mm-hmm. that to me auditioning for initially to choreograph a film called Break-In. When I was sitting there, I was dressed just like I am in the movie. All those clothes, by the way, are my own personal clothes. That's not costume. That's how I dressed in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me, Menachem Golan asked me if I could act. And I said, yeah, I'm from Chicago.
Mr. Golan was the president of Canon Films at the time.
Yeah. Menachem Golan owned, along with Yoram Globus, his cousin.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So I went and I auditioned for Pamela Basker and Fern Champion, and basically just played myself. And then the next time, they wanted me to see me and Boogaloo Shrimp together,
mm-hmm.
and Shrimp is Turbo and me is Ozone. And me and Shrimp, we had a rapport. It was kind of like Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis. We always had this shtick.
That comes through in the film. I got to tell you, that comes through. Today, I'll even say to you that both of you guys are probably the most beloved characters, dance characters, in the history of film. And I have to say that simply because there's never been two like you. Like you two. You understand what I'm saying? It was almost you... Meant to be, okay? But go ahead.
Yeah. I tell you, it was a thrill working and creating that history with Shrimp. And Shrimp was part of my dance crew. You got to understand. And I'll make this statement.
You were talking about the symbiotic relationship you had with Boogaloo Shrimp in the making of the film Breaking One, almost like Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen some of the early pictures of Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, and they did do some vaudevillian type of stuff together, dance routines. They were both probably came out of vaudeville. And their relationship was much like, as you say, you and Shrimp and Breaking. But go ahead.
Yeah, I know for certain it was our chemistry that got us the role together,
mm-hmm.
Which they saw the value in the chemistry, and they cast both of us. They casted me as the leading man, straight guy with the wild, crazy sidekick.
Okay,
and it was a little bit like that's why you see him in the film with the cupcakes, ugh, acting like kind of Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the silly one. Although every now and again, like in Breaking Two, I may show a humorous side per se, where I tell him how to get a girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the only way that works is if one of you is straight guy and the other one is the comedic talent anyway, because he plays off you, you play off him. You know what I'm saying? So it worked. The film goes on. It's a hit. Now, I got to ask you something. At the same time, they were working on a film in New York produced by Harry Belafonte.
Yeah.
Now, were you at any time made to feel that there was a race to get this film done? Okay, tell us about that, please.
I wasn't made to feel it. I know for a fact that it was a foot race. Mm-hmm. During that time, you know, right before I did I went in to meet with them to choreograph the film Breaking.
Mm-hmm.
I was cast in another film called Body Rock by New World Pictures.
Right.
And they took me off that film. They said they wanted a guy that girls would like. More of a heartthrob. Yeah. They hired Renzo Lamas.
Right.
In the lead role. I then go across town to meet with the folks over at Canon to choreograph Breaking. But I also was familiar with the Fast Forward film by Harry Belafonte, and I also was aware of the Beat Street film.
Okay.
We all were. So there was four films or more being bounced around and were at different levels of production. And
all of them were trying to be the first hip-hop film out.
Oh yeah, but Menachem Golan would not be denied. He was like he was bent on it being first.
Okay. So that film comes out. It's a hit. Where does it take Shabadoo?
Well, it made me an international dance star.
There you go. Okay. Your life.
I certainly had national notoriety and all of that.
Right.
But by then it gave my dance career rocket fuel. All over the world, suddenly we were mobbed. People ask me, they say, what was your fame, your level of fame, you and Shrimp? In those days, I would say that when we first came out, they treated us like the Beatles or something.
There was
pulling
nothing
our
like
hair.
Nothing like
go,
that.
We couldn't go in public.
Period.
They used to go, like, you know, tearing our clothes and pulling our hair and stuff. For
oh, man. You got the full star treatment.
Oh, yeah.
What is your relationship with Boogaloo Shrimp now?
I would say pretty non-existent. I don't really have a relationship with him.
Okay. Any reason that you could go into?
I just think that people come together to serve a purpose in their lives. And, you know, and we did. We came together. We served our purpose, mission accomplished, and it was time to move on.
Time to move on. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you know, I certainly have no bad feelings towards Shrimp or wish him harm in any way, but I think that we served our purpose. We did what we were supposed to do.
Okay. So
now it's over.
Now you're in a big film worldwide. You're traveling worldwide. Did you plan on trying to seek straight acting roles and transition from dance, or did you decide to stay in dance and turn down roles that didn't have any dancing in?
I never turned down anything, and I pretty much did whatever came my way. I'm a song and dance man. That's what I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I focused a lot on that, so I went on to, I started in another film right after that. I had a three-picture deal with Canon. I had the third picture I started in was called Lumbada, Set the Night on Fire for Warner Brothers.
Wow.
I did that with Canon Films. And then I went on to star in and choreograph Madonna's World Tour.
Wow.
I kept moving. You know, wherever my dance or performance life would take me, I went.
Okay. Now, you've written a book.
I've written a book, and it is due out late summer, early fall. The King of Crenshaw.
The King of Crenshaw. Okay, by
yes.
Shabadoo. Is it by Shabadoo or Adolfo Quiñones?
It's about Adolfo Quiñones. It's by Adolfo Quiñones, aka Shabadoo.
Gotcha.
I think the full title right now is The King of Crenshaw, Shabadoo, the dance forefather of hip hop.
Okay. You're looking, if someone wants to make a film out of your book, who's going to play Shabadoo when you're one of a kind?
Well, we have to find, there's got to be an actor out there somewhere.
Okay. All right.
I can certainly do that.
You're listening to Shabadoo on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. He's been dropping nothing but bombs. Okay, from Soul Train to The Lockers to Breaking, the man has done it all. I'm going to ask you one last question, and we're going to wrap this up. I could talk to you for days, but, brother, you got stories and information, okay? What does the future hold for Shabadoo at this point in his life?
Well, you know, I really don't know. If I knew that, I would go out and play the lottery. So why would I waste like that with this radio show?
Okay.
I would
well,
just go over there and pick my numbers
films.
And call it a day. But, you know, I continue to focus on developing my relationship with Jehovah. You know, I study now to be a Jehovah's Witness. I maintain my friendships with my dear friends like Marvin Booz. I told you he's here today. You should have spoken to him too.
Who?
Puppet Boozer is right here from the Electric Boogaloo.
Hey, bring him on. Introduce him and let's get some minutes.
Okay. Hey, everyone out there, I'd like for you to meet Puppet Boozer, Marvin Boozer, a dear, sweet friend of mine. I know him. I knew his loving parents. He was he's the benefactor of real great parenting. He's a good man. He'll tell you all about himself as well. But I love him. He's like a brother to me. In any case, he should be more respectful too. But that's a whole nother radio show. In any case, okay. here he is, everyone. Puppet Boozer, the original electric boogaloo.
Look out. How you doing, my brother?
All right, sir. How are you?
All right. And obviously your relationship with Shabadoo is historic. And how has he impacted your life as inspiration?
You know, when I first started dancing with Shab, I was barely out of high school. I was 17 years old.
What year are we talking?
79.
Okay.
79. And he showed me, you know, about how to handle yourself professionally. He showed me about business, just watching him. And he actually had to come to my house and convince my mother to let me go on the road with him.
Oh, well, that is a big thing, yeah, your child going on the road. Okay. And she did.
Yeah. Yeah, he did it. He had to make some promises. But, she's convinced that he would look after me. And, you know, I got to travel and see things I would have never seen, you know, because when I started dancing with him, the Electric Boogaloos had kind of gone the way of the Lockers. We had kind of disbanded and everybody was kind of doing their own thing.
Wow.
And some of them had stopped dancing. I wanted to continue to dance. And he gave me that opportunity.
Okay. Now, you meet a lot of types of people in show business. What type of man is Shabadoo?
He's very high energy. Mm-hmm. He's very focused. Once he makes up his mind, he wants to do something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, at that time, and I'm sure still, very much about his business. He knew his value, and he wasn't going to take anything less than what he thought his value was. And that went for the people with him as well.
Okay. And I would like to talk to you much more, but we got to wind it up. We're glad to get you out there. And are you going to be working with the brother on some of his upcoming projects?
You know, I mostly go to things now when I can, and just to support him because he's my friend and I love him. We're like family, and I just, you know, if I can get a chance to go and support whatever he's doing, that's what I do.
Okay. And your name again, your professional name?
My professional name is Puppet Boozer.
All right. And you got videos out there on YouTube?
Oh, yes, sir. I have videos of myself with the Electric Boogaloos on Soul Train. We did two appearances on there, and then I have an appearance on Soul Train with Shabadoo.
Wow.
Hey, so that Puppet Boozer, you're going to see the original shows where the Electric Boogaloo were introduced on Soul Train, and you're going to see the big shows. Puppet Boozer are all in those shows. Even he did a Mike Douglas show with me. He toured with me. He did a lot. He's being humble right now, but he's done a lot with me.
Okay.
Yeah, I've traveled done quite a bit with Shabadoo.
Okay. Let me get him back on. It was nice to meet you, my brother. We will be talking to you probably more in the future because we plan on doing some projects together, and I'll probably end up meeting you, okay?
Yes, sir. Pleasure was all mine.
Thank you. Shabadoo, got one last question for you, my brother.
Yes.
Okay. What do you got going on right now that people, I understand you teach, and some of the people in Los Angeles might want to reach out to you. How can people reach out to you? What do you got going on? And how can people reach out if they want to contact you on social media?
You can reach me on social media. You can reach me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/ Shabba, SHABBADOO. That's a space, capital DOO. And you can, my official Facebook fan page is Adolfo Shabadoo Quiñones. And you can catch me on Instagram. That's Official Shabadoo. That's my IG tag. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you can also join my website at www.shabadoo.com. That's spelled S-H-A-B-B-A hyphen D-O-O.com. So, again, it's www.shabba, S-H-A-B-B-A hyphen D-O-O.com. And I have a number of projects. You'll hear about my book will be out later this year. You got to get it, The King of Crenshaw. And you'll be and check out my episode on produced by Tamiza Fan over at BET. It's called I Want to Be It. I Was a Soul Train Dancer. Thank you all to all my fans out there that has given me a whopping million plus views in less than a month or so, and I appreciate it. And I will continue to do my best to offer the best work I could do.
Okay, a man who's still got it going on, Shabadoo, and the King of Crenshaw. His book will be out this year. He just told you how to reach him on social media. And Shabadoo, I'm going to tell you, from all of us, and I think I can speak for your millions of fans, thank you for your contribution to hip hop. Okay, because like it or not, you're being clumped in with all the rest of us. Okay, but you've contributed greatly to the art of dance, okay?
Wow.
And we want to thank you for that, and we hope that your book is successful and that the rest of your career is just as exciting and as successful as what you've just described to us in the past hour and a half.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Don't hang up after this because I got to talk to you. You've been listening to world famous, the legendary Shabadoo. He's been dropping bombs on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B. We out.
So, wasn't that a great show? Come back next week, every Sunday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop and R&B Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic. See you next week. Bye.